And here you go.
Yeah, Rico, that's me. Hello, how's everybody feeling? Everybody feeling okay? Can y'all do me a favor? You know, this is something that that really played a very important in my recovery. Can you just give each other a hug? Can we do that?
Rico and Rick. Cool.
Yeah, hug, man. You got that right. Hey, Vaughn, you want to sit up here, too? Yeah, okay. I felt okay, didn't it? You know, I'm gonna tell y'all my story. You know, I'm gonna give you a little kind of a shot as to what happened to me. You know, my beginnings started, my drug addiction started before I used the first drug. And it seemed that the more you stay here, they say, the more be revealed. You know, I've been around. I'm not gonna tell you my clean date because whenever somebody give me the clean date, I try to figure it in my head, and I can't count that quick, you know. But I've been clean 34 years, and but looking back, the longer I stay clean, the more I understand what happened to me. And I'm like the speaker that just spoke at the main speaker meeting. Was that even if they made narcotics legal and it didn't do anything to me, wouldn't interfere with my life, I still choose not to use it. You know, because I've been on this side of recovery and it has been a beautiful experience. My addiction really started when I was a child. I was a wounded child. My parents, first of all, I was ashamed. You know, shame and guilt will really destroy people. I was ashamed of my parents. My father was 20 years older than my mother. He was short and dark-skinned, and my mother was tall and light-skinned. In fact, people used to tease me and say that wasn't my mother. They tell me, you was adopted. You know what I mean? Just because we weren't the same color. You know, and it affected me so much that I went up to my mother and was crying and said, you're not my mother. And my mother had to take me to the mirror and point out her features. You know, she showed me her lips, you know, her nose. And that's how she convinced me that she was my mother. Then that's how peer pressure can come down so hard on people that you start to believe what other people think about you or say about you. My father was short and dark-skinned, and he had me when he was old man. You know, somebody might ask you, What was the texture of your father's hair? Well, he was bald-headed when I met him. So I couldn't tell you if he had cut hair, you know. I couldn't tell you anything about the color of his hair because he was an old guy when he had me. My mother was a beautiful woman. She was striking, you know. In fact, in the black neighborhood, we call it, she had good hair, you know. And she looked like an Indian. And her name was Pearl. But the one thing about her, though, every other word out of her mouth was a cuss word. She just didn't look the way she, the way she, her behavior didn't display the way she looked. She dropped out in the ninth grade. My father dropped out in the third grade. He couldn't even write his name. He had to write an X. You know, Mr. Rush, can we get your signature? He write, they won't even let you do that today. But he had to write an X. He couldn't write his name. He drove a truck for what's called the Evening Star newspaper. The kids teased me, said he was a paper boy. You know, so y'all laughing already about it. I'll come over there and steal you, man. You know? My mother was a janitor, you know, and you know, back in the day, they used to have people stand up and say, what do your parents do for a living when you're in elementary school? What do your parents do for a living? I lied. You know, that's when I first told a lie, man. I think I was in elementary school. I said my parents worked for the government. If living in Washington, D.C., if you worked for the government, you was doing well. You know, but I was ashamed of them. I was ashamed. My mother had me when she was 18, so she must have been 17 when she got pregnant. My father was 37. See, he should have got locked up for statutory rape, you know. When they raised me, I'm going to tell you how my life, you know, how one incident can change a person's life. I had a horse, a broom with a horse head on it. And I had two guns. See, I'm a little older than most people in here. There was a cowboy named Hopalong Cassidy. Y'all remember him? And they brought me, you know, the guns and the boots and everything. And I'm riding in the neighborhood, you know, I'm in the neighborhood. And about seven guys came up to me and said, "Man, we want your stuff." Now, I'm like, "Man, I can't give you my stuff, man. We're going to take your stuff. We're going to whip you every day." Now, it was a gang in my neighborhood called the Mamas. And these were the baby Mamas that had jumped me and took my stuff. I went home crying, and my mother beat me and said, "You let somebody take something from you." Now my mother think I'm a punk. So I started looking in the neighborhood, and I noticed that people who weren't getting picked on was thugs and hooligans. So they said, "If you can't beat them, what? You join them." So I started hanging around the thugs in the neighborhood, and there was a movie came out called Little Caesar with Evan G. Robinson. And actually, in that movie, his name was Rico. And I started to emulate and act like him when I was growing up, man. I was like, yeah. You know, I was still big guys and everything because I was real short at first, the first part of my life. And the guys in the neighborhood said, "You remind us of the guy in the movie Rico," and that's how I got my name, Rico, from a movie. That one incident had me getting into this thing that I wanted to be a gangster. I had found my father's gun. I told my friends, I said, "Man, we going all over D.C. because I got a weapon right here." I used to have a jacket that I wear, and I had the gun in my pants like the brother said earlier. And I would go in the party and take the jacket and move it like that so people would say, "Oh, he got a gun." And people started moving around. So I'm getting the defense. And with grace, Lord, I didn't shoot anybody back in the days. You know, I would hope somebody would step on my foot, you know, or do something to me. But it never happened. I turned around, my father and them was having parties, you know. They had a bar in the house. My father got the house through hitting the number. He hit the number. They had a bar. Oh, let me back up a little bit. Oh, when he hit the number and bought the house, we didn't live in the whole house. Let me explain that to you. We had to room out some of the rooms, right? Because we couldn't afford the whole house. He had, we slept in the dining room. And we had one bed. It was my mother, my father, and me. They would put me in the bed, and I'd be in the center of the bed. I wake up, I'm on the end of the bed. I fall asleep, wake back up, I'm back in the center. What do you think happened? They used to give me alcohol so I could go to sleep and sleep all night. And you know, funny today, they tell people don't give alcohol to babies and put them on their gums and everything. That's the start of alcoholism. I couldn't dance, but you know something, when I got the alcohol in me, I could dance better than James Brown. You know what I mean? It gave me courage. And then, as I'm growing up, and I'm just going to hit some of the high points of my life, I started to, they told me that they call alcohol ignorant oil, and it make you ignorant. You always want to fight and everything. I was introduced to marijuana, because marijuana was real mellow. And it was during the hippie era. Everything was cool. You know, people walking around like this. And if you talk too loud, you say, "Hey, man, you killing my high, man. you know, blowing my high. So I started to smoke marijuana, then I started selling it. And, again, I tell you, more be revealed, I understood I was addicted to the lifestyle before I started doing the drugs. It was the lifestyle. It was something about being, doing something that nobody else is doing. The rest of society is doing the right thing. I'm doing underhanded stuff, making deals. I like that fast life, that excitement, purchasing drugs, getting away from the police. I start stealing, going to, getting locked up. I didn't know that I was wounded until I realized that I played baseball. That was my dream, to be a major league baseball player. Pitched. My dream was to be a major league baseball player. Do you know, I played baseball, I pitched a double hitter. A double hitter, a no hitter, a double hitter. And I had to go home with somebody else's family with a guy who didn't even play in the game. So my family never showed up. Never showed up for any of the baseball game. I started playing trumpet. I was in the band. I was playing trumpet. I was playing Beethoven, Tchaikovsky, concert music, marching music. Parents never showed up. Sent me to church, and they never went. Never. My parents never went to church, but they sent me to church. So looking back, when I was saying I was wounded, it was a lot of neglect, and I felt abandoned and neglected. I went all the way to the 12th grade, and I'm in the yearbook, the Eastern High School, 1966. In May, I quit school. Why are you quitting school? I quit. I was angry as hell. And again, that's what I said, more reveal. I understand why I quit. I figured that my parents never showed up for nothing I've done. They probably ain't going to show up for the graduation. I'm going to be embarrassed again. I'm going to be ashamed. So I said, I'm going to show them. They can kiss my you-know-what. That rebellion, started going. I'm turning around. I got locked up. My mother said she'll never come see me. It's funny that when you're locked up and your parents come see you, that's a good feeling when you get a visit, isn't it? Man, people was getting visits, the names being called. No one looked at me, man. I'm teenage. Your parents ain't coming down here. My mother finally came. I was in there about 7-8 months. Got out. Got drafted. Got drafted when in the service. Now, I was angry at first. Now I'm in the service. I'm angry because they drafted me. They drafted the whole neighborhood back then. It was in 1966. I went to basic training. Went straight to Vietnam. Bam. Now I'm saying, the white people are sending me to Vietnam. Now, I'm angry because I'm in the service. I'm angry at society because they sent me. If now was then, I'd probably been a terrorist. That's how angry I was when I came back from Vietnam. I started doing all kind of drugs. I drank so much over there and smoked so much reefer that I had ulcers. I was only 19 years old because I just couldn't deal and cope with what was happening over there. For the grace of God, I'm sitting here right now with some sanity that I got from this program right here. I came back from Vietnam. I was in the Black Power movement. And I was going around talking about Black Power, Black Power. I went down 14th and U in D.C. I said, Black Power. And the brother said, yeah, put your other hand up. This is a stick up. I said, damn, what the hell happened to the damn revolution? got introduced to heroin. I said, man, the hell with it, man. You know, it seemed like when we in the drugs, that's why NA works so well when they talk about fellowship. Because when we use drugs, it looked like we all in the same family. You know what I mean? If you got half, if you can share with me and you can do this, we real close. You know what I mean? And I got to the point that this is a grace. I got arrested soon I came home from Vietnam, too. And I was hustling over there because that lifestyle never changed. You know, I still had that street. That street was in me deep. It was deep embedded in me. I came home. I got with some friends. And I tell guys today, man, and, you know, because I work with youth, that if you get a lady, she ain't doing nothing. Listen to your lady. She'll tell you don't hang with them. Don't she? Don't hang with them guys. You hang with them anyway, you know. I'm with my lady. Call me up. Come on, man. We get ready to do something. And I just came home from Nam, bought a Malibu. Bucket seats, canary yellow and black. Man, bad number, Joe. Woo! Look. First day I had the car, I'm down 8th Street Northeast, and we break into Art Young Men's Store. And the police, oh, yeah, how about that? We break in the store. Police arrest me. This is the grace. Police arrest me. Even other police said, you got locked in by the worst police in the force, officers on the force. He didn't even want nobody to help him when he was writing the report out. You know, his partner. Yeah, I got this. Yeah, this is my collar, you know. So they had given me 4 felonies and 3 misdemeanors, you know, for this charge. Before I go to court, now I'm going to a place called Lorton Reformatory. I just know I'm going to jail. I tried to shoot all the heroin and all the money I bought back from Nam. I tried to do everything because I knew I was going away for a long time. Just the grace. The police officer that locked me up was on the undercover thing. Two black guys had robbed the gas station and they was running across the park. And the guy arresting me was plain clothes. He see 2 guys going across the park, him and his partner. They jump out and start running across the park. 2 white police officers heard the same thing. They were uniformed. They heard the same call. So they saw 2 black guys, but they didn't know they were police officers. So they jump out. And when they jump out and chase them, they say, halt. One police officer threw his gun down. The other one turned around with the gun in his hand. And they killed him. This is the police that locked me up. So I go to court, and I stand in front of the judge, and they got them little swinging doors. Some of the guys remember this is how long ago it was. So I go in front of the judge, and you know how they put that noise on? See, when they talking to the judge, the lawyer, you know? And I'm like, what the hell are they saying? So he comes back, and they tell me to step back from the little swinging door. Now, wait a minute, there's something peculiar about this. The lawyer said, they dropped the case. And the lawyer tried to get on me, told me, man, you owe me $1,000 more. You know, I know. But that's the grace. I didn't go to jail. They dropped the charges. Then, you know, and I'm not going to get into all the details, but I've been getting arrested. I just was fortunate enough to have a paid lawyer. And every time I went to court, my lawyer would tell the judge, this man is not a criminal. He's a dope fiend. And grace, since I haven't shot no heroin or did no drugs, I haven't been to penitentiary in over 35 years. That's grace. And when they did send me, they told me, my lawyer told me the judge had, his wife had died. And the lawyer said, send him a sympathy card for his wife. I did it. And when I went in front of the judge after he came back, after about almost a year, he was off, you know. He had sent me to a federal drug institution called Lexington, Kentucky. That's grace. There are women down there. Praise the Lord. But I came out and still did the same thing. Still did heroin and still did drugs. Was on methadone. Still wounded. The guy who was in charge of the methadone program, we had meetings, but it was just a regular meeting, and all of it, even the counselors were getting high. Everybody was getting high, you know. And there was one guy in there, name was John Mark Lyons, praise him. He was the only guy that wasn't getting high. He was in AA. And you know what, I'm going to tell you, I talked about him like a dog. You know, he always talked about the program. And then, see, NA wasn't in D.C. then. You know, we had one NA meeting that wasn't registered and was at the VA hospital. And he talked me into going into the VA. And I said, I ain't going in there because snitches in there. People was getting off the street. You know, they were snitches. So the elements, like my brother was talking today, man, look, I understand what it is to be homeless. And people will say, you know, I see the people on the street, it's cold as hell out there. Why don't they get some help? But you know what? I was like that. They told me, I mean, I used to go in the laundromats and carry the stick, they call it. And, they said, Reek, go to the mission, man. You at least get three hots in a cot. I said, what you got to do? He said, well, you got to pray to Jesus. I said, man, F Jesus, man. You know, that was my attitude, man. I was an angry man. My wife, who was never there, I was bringing the drug money. She didn't want it. It's Grace. She cheated on me. Then wound up one day, I went to the apartment. Stuck my key in the door. Damn. It didn't work. So I walked I went to the manager's office. I said, I can't get in my apartment. He said, Mr. Rush, your wife moved out. I said, yeah, but I want to get in the apartment. Your name wasn't on the lease. I didn't know if your name ain't on the lease. You homeless. So they had snatched my car, and it's funny how, you know, when they snatched my car, first I looked around, I thought maybe, you know, I parked it somewhere else. You know, I kept going around the block, you know. Then when I found it, I said, I ain't want the damn car anyway. You know, didn't want her anyway. It's funny, man, you ain't got, you saw what I'm saying. I mean, I ain't want it any damn way. That's grace, though. I stayed down the street. Now I'm only, check this out, I'm only 28 years old. 27, 28 years old. I'm home now. I got so bad that they called me the first Rastafarian in America. I had my hair plaited and it all the way down to my shoulders. And if you don't wash your head, mad up. I didn't know your beard did the same thing. You know, my beard matted up too. I'm going around cussing like a mother. You know, I was cussing myself out. People call me the boogeyman. Whenever I walk down the street, they cross over to the other side. I got on the bus. It was crowded. Everybody in the back went up to the front. I looked and said, this is my damn bus anyway. You know, my grandmother got on the bus one time. I said, how you doing, girl? She got off the next stop. Thanksgiving Day, I went home and knocked on the door. My mother didn't open the door. She just said, what the hell you want? I said, it's Thanksgiving. She said, so? You better get the hell away from here. My parents don't want me, you know. Man, I got some, now I'm wounded. I'm really wounded. I got Vietnam issues. I'm going crazy. I got to the point where I ran to the bus, in front of a bus on 14th Street, and I've stopped the bus like this, and I waved the people to go in front of the bus, but there wasn't no people. You know, I was totally out of my mind. And as that guy said, this is why I said grace. There's 60-some thousand men on that wall down there, Vietnam Veterans Wall. Twice as many committed suicide. I'm one of the survivors. There's something I learned in the fellowship called Survivor's Guilt. That why was I the one that survived when a lot of my peers didn't make it? So all this stuff is happening to me at a very young age. And the guy taught me and I went to treatment. And that's why I asked y'all to give a hug, you know, when we first started. Because when I went in that treatment program, I was totally out of my damn mind. And it's funny that the people who were the most arrogant ain't got a damn pot to piss in or a window to throw it out. You couldn't tell me nothing. I ain't want to hear nothing you had to say to me. You know, but this lady named Carmelita Witherspoon, she's no longer with us. But I had to have all my teeth removed at 29 years old from me not taking care of myself. If I had enough nerve, just a grace, I would have committed suicide. I would have killed myself. Bam! I just didn't have enough heart to do that. I was hoping that I shot an OD, that I just go out like that. I remember I went up to New York. I was sharing with a brother. Went up to New York, and I put out one of them damn mayonnaise jar tops. And the drugs in D.C. is different from the drugs in New York back then, you know. And I put all this drugs in there. You know what? For grace, them brothers up there and that shooting guy told me, man, you're going to kill yourself, man. You know, and I took some of that dope out, man. I've had so much grace that I'm still here that I can't believe myself that I got 34 years and I'm happy. Happy, man. I turn around and that lady hugged me, and that was the first time somebody touched me, man. It's important. See, in the other fellowship, they don't hug like that. When we started this thing in NA and D.C. and really got off the ground, you had to hug somebody, man. You got to hug the newcomer. Touch him. We saw how important that was. And I saw that had a lot of impact on me because when I look back, my parents never supported me. They never showed up for anything. But the fellowship does. The fellowship does. I turned around, went to back to school, because I was in the halfway house, and was going to meetings, and it was suggested to me, to go, since I dropped out in 12th grade, not to get a GED, but to go to the Department of Education, see how many credits you need. Found I only need two. Went back to night school, got a high school diploma, walked across state, hugged the daggone principal. She thought I was crazy, you know, but I was like, gratitude. I'm graduating. I'm walking across stage. Family wasn't there. Fellowship was there. Turned around, took a job as a janitor. Couldn't do nothing else because all I know is hustling and conniving and sticking up and robbing, selling drugs. I started cleaning up buildings and apartment buildings. And this is a shame. I didn't have no teeth. I used to talk to people like this. Hey, what's going on? What, how you doing, brother? Everything good? And somebody said, well, why are you hiding your mouth? I said, man, I'm ashamed, man. Shit, man. You going to get some teeth, aren't you? Yeah. And then I stopped and looked, hey, what's going on? How you doing? What's happening, baby boy? Everything cool? Got the teeth. You see? They said, hey, there's one thing with the program. If they tell you something, believe it. If they've been around a while, they know it's going to be true. I got them damn teeth, man. I was, hey, you thought I hit the lotto. Hey, what's going on? I started cleaning the building. This is the amazing part. I changed my attitude because I went to treatment. So I went to treatment, and I went to therapy. And I made amends. You know, I found out when the therapist got to the exact nature, that feel is more inventory. I wanted to go to Vietnam because I was raised with John Wayne. See, I love John Wayne. So deep down inside, I wanted to go to Nam. So it took away some of my excuses of why I kept saying I don't like these people. And I ain't like Bama suckers or squares. You know, all the people that could help me. You know, even Vietnamese. And it just so happened, when I started cleaning them buildings, somebody suggested to me, said, look, man, they got a job opening in housekeeping in NIH. I said, they ain't going to hire me because I'm an ex-offender, blah, blah, blah. And I was in a halfway house and all that. They said, man, go ahead and try for the job. I applied for the job. And check this out. Some guys came to me and told me, man, the Mr. Fletcher, the white man, he said, man, he's racist as hell, man. Now, I don't even know these guys. This is why the fellowship is so good, because people will say, you can't, don't listen to people that don't really know. I wonder why these guys come to me. They don't even know me. So I go in there and I interview the guy, and he said, oh, what's the rush? Well, look, you got 10 years. What's going on? I told him the truth. I said, and I'm in the halfway house. I go to meetings. I got a sponsor. He said, I'll tell you what, can you get me a letter? And I'm doing well in the halfway house. See, because I learned that from beginning of treatment. I make my meetings. I show up on time. I'm being responsible. I got that letter, man. That man saw that letter. He said, oh, my God, I got two positions. Which one you want? One was at 7 in the morning, and one started at 12. I took the 12, because institutions, you always got to get up early. You know, I told him I'm going to be the best damn janitor you ever had. And like that guy said, you can have any do and be anything you want in this program. I took that job, and I was cleaning, and somebody said, Mr. Rush, somebody, you know, defecated on the wall. Was, you know, doo-dooed on the wall. Because the women don't sit on the toilet. They, you know, I learned all about women and all that. You know, they don't sit on that thing, man. They that stuff be going up on the wall. You know what I mean? My attitude was this. I said, where is it? Man, I grabbed my stuff, man. I couldn't wait to clean some shit off the wall. Because I'm grateful that I got a job. And, you know, people were saying, you know, you're doing a good job. And I learned it from my father. I said, can you put that in writing? And that man got so many letters. Oh, my God. He said, he called me in office, Mr. Rush. I'm going to have to put you in for a cash award for being a superior performance award, being, you know, for your performance. Because all the guys were coming to me telling me, man, you're doing too much. But see, I'm going somewhere. They told me you could be anything. I believed them. How about this lady? I was cleaning her office. And I'm trying to learn new words because I'm trying to change my vocabulary. And she had a word up on her. She had a blackboard in her office. And the word was hypothetical. And I saw that word. And I asked her about it. And she broke it down to me. And I told her my story. And she was a white lady. And didn't know she was a professor at UDC. They had a satellite campus at NIH. And she said, do you know that you work here, you can go to school free? I said, but I've been, you know, I started doing that, running that number on her. I've been out of school. And did it. And she said, I'll tell you what, I'm a tutor to you. And she said, you remind me of Malcolm X, your story. And she gave me the book, the autobiography of Malcolm X. And this 30-some years ago. He wasn't even well-known like he is now. And me and her developed a relationship. And they offered that they had an opportunity at NIH for people in blue-collar jobs to get a white-collar job. I turned around and I enrolled in school. I got selected to this program. And check this out. Disgrace. I went from UDC, going to school there, getting in a program at NIH, getting transferred to American University, being trained as administrative officer, part-time work, and going to school full-time, full-time pay, and wound up graduating of the School of Business at American University. And became administrative officer. The same job, I was a janitor. That's grace. I turned around and stayed there about 4 or 5 years. Left my good government job. This is the grace. You know, because most people get a government job, stay there until they retire. But I went to a university school of business that said, hey, it ain't the job, it's the skills that you have within. I turned around and graduate. And I forgot to tell you, the lady who introduced me to the school and everything tutored me. When I graduated, I had a graduation party at her house, paid for everything. That's grace. After I stayed on that job, I was offered a job to be the director of a detox program in Montgomery County called Social Model Detox. Now I'm going to be the head, I don't want N-word, in charge. You understand? I left my good government job, then I went into treatment, working in treatment. And at the same time, I'm volunteering, going back to the VA, doing workshops and counseling groups with the guys, you know, about my experience and getting them involved in it. And some of them are sitting in right in this room. And I turned around, and now I didn't realize this. Is that I, the more I did groups, the more I became good at it, the more I became an expert. Now, this is grace. Not only that, I hooked up with a couple of other guys called the Lions Concerned Men in Washington, D.C., and we wound up doing a gang intervention in a place called Simple City. Now, I got jumped by some gang members. Now, I'm the gang buster now. You know, I go all over the country and dealing with gangs and everything. That's grace. That's grace. Not only that, the government had paid me to go to different countries to do trainings in South Africa, all the Caribbean islands, Nicaragua. Any of y'all have been to Nicaragua? No. And doing trainings, teach people how to deal with addicts in the penitentiaries, priests, professionals, doctors, lawyers, and how to deal with addicts. Now, the same country that I resent is employed me to do trainings in other countries. Good God, I mean, you can do and be anything you want to be. While this is taking place, I discovered I had hepatitis C. I had cirrhosis of the liver. My liver was so bad that when they did a biopsy and they took the needle, it broke the needle. I was asymptomatic. This is where the program come in at. Because now I'm in the program, I'm working my steps, and they're saying you got to take care of your health. So I go to a doctor who happened to be in the program, you know, and we're doing physicals, and he told me that my liver was bad from the blood test. I didn't pay attention because I didn't feel nothing. I was in denial. The next year, when he took the blood test, he came to me, and let me tell you, you know, this is how the fellowship works. That doctor told me, he said, Rico, and I ain't going to cuss, but he said, your liver is effed up. But he said the word. I said, oh, my God. Now I got to take heed to what he's saying. It's almost like following your sponsor. I went to Georgetown. Oh, no, first I went to Washington Hospital Center. They put me on this gurney, and they took that little thing. You know, like to do the babies, the mother's wound, the sonogram. And the first lady did it. Then she brought another guy, and it was three or four, man. They came in. I asked them, I said, was it a boy or a girl? You know. But I got a sense of humor because the fellowship told me, don't worry about nothing. You understand? It's going to be all right. And I got support now, see. I went to Georgetown, had a staff of people, and you got to have psychological. And this is the good part. This is the great. Stop smoking. Start taking care of my body. And when they said that you need a liver, put me on the list. 2 months. 2 months, man. I got a liver, man. This guy was in the hospital, and he had a box, and he was walking down the hall. I told my wife, I said, think of my liver right there. I'm trying to catch up with it in the morning. You know, I'm joking about something that's serious. But that's the level that this program got me, that don't worry about, just stop worrying about, don't predict the outcome. Have a positive attitude no matter what you're going through. Got a liver transplant. Now, it was 2001, October the 12th, 1 month after 9/11. because they had stopped. A lot of people died because of 9/11 because they was flying people, you know, livers to them, and they stopped all the air traffic. No, was no air moving, no traffic moving. As time go on, you know, I got all the support my man in here, whoever came to see me, man. And this is why the fellowship is so important in helping and reaching out and helping other people. It don't necessarily have to be drugs. Just about life and what we're going through. And he asked me, he said, man, how'd you get yours? I told him, I said, man, don't say I can't get nothing. Because it ain't a matter if, it's a matter when. He changed. He stopped looking at why he was victimized. He wasn't getting it. And it was, a couple of months later, he got a damn liver. Grace. I'm an eternal optimist because of this program right here. Eternal optimist. Turn around as time went on. The medicine I was taking for my liver affected my kidney. Man, I got kidney problem. I'm on dialysis. But I got a brother who's 17 years younger than me. And he had the same fate I did. He wound up being on drugs, doing bad, and was homeless. Somebody was trying to kill him. Got on that Peter Pan bus. It was $4.95. Sent him up to New York. Stayed up there. Went to jail. Then went to treatment. Finally went to treatment after, you know, and it doesn't matter how many times you go to treatment either, because he went a multitude of times. But he finally went into one in Samaritan Inn, they call it, and he stayed up there for a year, and then he went to 8 months transition. I stuck by him through all this period of time that he was on drugs. See, I learned how to do that now, how to support people. And how to stick with them. And when I needed a kidney, at this time he had 6 years. He found out I didn't even want to approach him about giving me a kidney. He just said, look, man, I heard, you know, you need a kidney, you got mine. And they did a DNA, and we 17 years apart. And I'm like, damn, man, wow. When the doctor came back, he said, Mr. Rush, your brother's 100%. I said, damn, you're my real brother, man. You know? That's grace. You know, I can't believe, you know, I'm in awe of my own life. I'm in awe. Because, and just like the brother said today, people, I got things, man. I got things. I'm a Vietnam veteran. I hated the VA. I never wanted nothing from them. You know, and for years, I wouldn't even associate with them except I went through a drug program from them. But it was suggested that I put a claim in because they had Agent Orange over there. I got diabetes, high blood pressure, glaucoma. I can only see out one eye, liver transplant, kidney transplant. I'm happy as a mother. F. And that's only because of this program here. That's grace. That's grace, man. I stopped feeling sorry for myself because I take them steps. Continue to take personal inventory. I have to because I won't even buy no hot stuff. Anybody like, look, man, they got this. I said, look, I ain't buying nothing hot. I won't even mash a grape right now. I won't do anything. And they said it. This is a grace. You'll be able to afford it. They'll pay the real price. I'm able to do that. I wind up and they say, if you don't cop, you can shop. Didn't they say that? I got 3 cars, man. I got 2 cars paid for. I got an 88 IROC, the Z28, bad number 5.0. You know what I'm saying? I got a Mercedes to pay for. 450. I'm not saying that the brand, like that brother said, that's grace. That's grace because I was walking the streets. I was a bum. And I had no hope. And even seeing this program here And then, man, this 25 years, I've been clean longer than this damn convention been going on. And to watch it grow like that, and to see so many people when they be yelling out, Wyoming, Cleveland, New York, I said to myself, that's grace. That's grace. Because somebody had to stay clean for the rest of us to see that it worked. Somebody had, from your community, from your neighborhood, somebody had to say this program works. Now I'll get back to the wound. I understand when my parents died, I made amends to them. And what happened was, where I was guilt and shame about my parents, this is what came out. Real simple. If it wasn't for them, I wouldn't be here. Just that simple, you know, analogy of them two getting together and producing me. So when they, and I've been here, and they died since I've been here, and I spoke it, I did the eulogy at my father's funeral. And you know when somebody's buried, they put their little plate down? You know what? I said, I'm going to give my parents a monument. I purchased a monument. And that came from resentful, bitter hate to love and appreciation. And this is what came out too. When I was in therapy, guy said, the therapist said, Mr. Rush, were you brought up in a Christian home? Yes, I was. Well, you know what? There's a Ten Commandment that kept you hostage. Honor thy mother and father, and your days will be long. But, so I couldn't say the word that I resented my parents. But the fellowship, the steps allowed me to clean those inside out. Because if it wasn't for the inside work that I've done on myself, I wouldn't be happy and satisfied with what's going on with me now. I wouldn't be happy and satisfied with that. And I got an invitation to go to Ireland. You know, they said to me, because we did a presentation about gang stuff. You know, they said, Mr. Rush, to me and the guy, Tyrone Parker, that we'd like to invite y'all over. The police wanted to invite us over to Ireland. And then they said there wasn't no white people there. I mean, no black people, I'm sorry. It's just like that guy said, you know. Yeah, but that just showed me the world is great and good, because that's what the fellowship showed me. There's no color. There's no color in the fellowship. But I got an invitation to go to a place, man, where there ain't no black people there. And because God has graced me with a tool. And you know what? I always do the hug. I even created a thing. This came out of the fellowship. Hug a thug and you might not get mugged. How about that one? Because that's what we do in here. We hug some thugs, don't we? You know? But some of the concepts and the thing about learning about life, I got it from here. I got it from when I'm dealing with groups and everything. We sit down and we had a discussion. They talk about the guilt and the shame. They talk about the gratitude, even the grace. Even the grace. I think that's the theme of this convention. There's grace and gratitude. I feel so overwhelmed because when they call and they do the count. And when they do the count, you notice there's a lot of years from the guy was 40, then it was 36, then there's a far distance from the 30 years to the 20 years. You know, so that period, it was just a few of us who stayed clean, you know. And I had promised myself that I wanted to be a person that demonstrated that you could stay off of heroin or drugs for a number of years. Like my brother said, never, never have to you have to go back. I remember somebody was telling me a story about the man had a puzzle of the world. I might have heard this before, but this is so true. And his little son said, "Daddy, I can put that puzzle of the world together." And father said, "Son, if I can't put that puzzle of the world together, I know you can't." In 30 seconds, bam, that little boy had that puzzle of the world together. Father came up to him and said, "Daddy, how did you put that puzzle of the world together?" He said, "There was a man on the back of the puzzle. I put the man together and the world fell into place." So my terms of recovery wasn't trying to get things first. It was getting me together, putting me together, and all those things surfaced and came to fruition. But I learned that here. Because I would always point the finger. You know, there's somebody said, "Man, you point one at you, I'm going to give you, and they got three at me." You know what I mean? And I never wanted to look at myself. Why was happening? I look at my drug addiction as a blessing. It was a blessing. Because I know what it is to do bad and what I have to do to stay clean. I've lost jobs since I've been here. I lost people and friends and family members. But I gained more friends and family members. Because the more of y'all stay clean, the bigger the family. So sometimes you got to lose something to gain something. You know, all the people that I sponsor. Oh, I forgot to mention this. Now I work at a place called CSOS in D.C. And that's another ironic thing. This is how things change. There used to be a law, if you was a felon, you couldn't associate with other felons. You couldn't even associate with them, right? Now, CSOSA is a reentry center in D.C., and half of the staff over there is felons. And in the program, in fact, ain't nobody there, man, because they all up here. The staff, they got a skeleton staff there. You know, the director told me, "Man, everybody gone, Reek." I said, "They're going to get some medicine." You know, but we breaking down myths. And see, I've been clean so long, they used to say this. Once a drug addict, always a drug addict. That ain't true no more. That ain't true. I've gotten recognized by the Attorney General. He's the highest man in the law office in the country. We're friends. I'm friends with the law, man. Come on, man. Tell me this ain't a miracle. You know what I mean? I got pictures of hugging the chief of police in D.C. People say, they're not my enemy. You know, my enemies is that drug out there, man. That lifestyle. I still like that lifestyle. I knew more about Italian than I knew about black history. I can tell you where the damn map is, the Italy. The map, when I was coming up, it was a boot. But you ask me, ask some people where South Africa is. They can't even tell you where that is. A lot of people don't know where South Africa is. Oh, it's in Africa, Reek, but what part? You know? Man. I'm gonna tell you, man. I'm like a little kid, man. I'm still in awe, and I want to be open. I want to be open. They said that if you have a parachute, you jump out of a plane, and you don't parachute doesn't open, you crash. You know. And so I got 34 years, and I keep saying that, and I still listen to other people. It was suggested that I go to the VA. I'm a Vietnam veteran. There we go. You lost some limbs. Go put a claim in. God. Dad, that deals I am. You get 100% disability from the VA. That's grace. That's grace. Wasn't even looking for it. Don't pick up for the miracle. I'm actually hear that. Y'all hear that all the time? There's a miracle coming. There's something good. I can guarantee you this. There's something good. Everybody got a gift waiting for them. It's waiting for you. but you have to be ready for it. So whatever you're going through is preparing you for that. It's preparing for it. I didn't know that a liver was waiting for me. If I had a Hughes, I would have never been in. If I didn't take care of myself, if I didn't stop smoking cigarettes, and I started working out, man, I'm 64 years old, man. Shit, I can knock somebody, I can knock you out. Don't need a drug to do it. But I've learned how to, this body is my temple. I learned all that here. I learned everything. Everything that you need to know about life is in these rooms. It's not, it's when you get to a certain level, it ain't even about drugs no more. The drugs not a problem. It's not, I tell people, I don't have a fear. I don't come to meetings because I had a fear of using. I come to meetings because I had the inspiration to see what's not coming next. The next miracle. The next victory. That's what inspires me now. That's why I come here. I come here to see a miracle because I can't get no damn parking space. I had to get somebody to drive me down because I didn't want to lose my space. That's the miracle of this program. I want to thank the Chesapeake Potomac region. And I want to thank y'all. I want to thank y'all for being here because you've given more hope to this thing. If somebody was saying that maybe we need to go somewhere because we outgrowing this place. You know, that's a beautiful thing for me to be here 34 years and to see this going on there. I tell people that have been around a long time, I say, you know what? See, if you stop going to meetings, because people ask me, what, you still go to them damn meetings, Rico? I say, yeah, because meeting makers make it. And I said, I need to see that newcomer. So next year, like the brother gave him them T-shirts, I'll see him next year, and they'll tell me they got 2 years. And people come to me now and tell me, yeah, Ray, I got 20 years. I'm like, damn, you got 20 years? It just seemed like yesterday you had 30 days, you know what I mean? But that's because time is moving, and we having fun in this damn program. My man Lavelle. I said, my man Lavelle, man, we had a meeting. We did some things that wasn't in the books. He had 90 days, and he was running a group. And he got 20 years now. Y'all follow me? Yeah, you know. So it's like the you stay around here long enough, and I shot heroin. Let me tell you, I did opium and all them kind of drugs. But I've never, ever has gotten high. The natural high in this rooms. I've never got nowhere near this high using any kind of drug. Never. And I didn't do crack because, see, I was before crack. I don't want to do my mouth. Damn, man. I was, no, man. I see that. I was like, damn, hell no. I ain't doing that. You know? Yeah, so I want to thank everybody, man. And, you know, again, you know, all the people that's new, I mean, we first started. How about ending giving everybody a hug, too? How about that? Is that okay? Yeah, thank you very much.